Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. February is Disordered Eating Awareness Month, and so today I'm speaking about how we talk about food.
My name is Amelia Moleshkova. I am a regional dietitian lead for school age nutrition with Northern Health Authority.
What is it about this time of year that leads people to really changing their thoughts and trying to create new habits about healthy eating? What are maybe some of the risk factors in that?
For the new year, it's often a time when many people are making resolutions, including resolutions to eat healthier, which I often find is code for trying to lose weight. And social media is full of before and after photos, weight loss, and dieting ads. So it can be really easy to get swept up in it all. And there's nothing inherently wrong with having goals or trying to make small changes that will benefit you. But I find it interesting that the focus is often on restriction instead of positive additions that you can do to improve your health and your relationship with food.
Now, what does healthy eating mean?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I try to encourage people to think about this more broadly. So Northern Health actually defines healthy eating as getting enough good for you and good tasting food to provide energy for everyday living and to support short-term and long-term health and wellness. I think it's also important to recognize that how we define and experience healthy eating will be different. So this is because we have different needs, we have different life circumstances, and have access to different resources. As dietitians, we help people to eat in ways that works for them. And we take into account your likes and dislikes, your cultural foods, your income and budget, as well as the types of foods that you have access to in your community.
Absolutely. And in your article that Northern Health posted, that was a really good point to talk about adding rather than removing. Can you highlight some of the factors that people might not think of or some of those additions that people can make, some of for our listeners?
Yeah, so I think it's helpful to think about nutrition in terms of addition and things you can add to your meal or snacks rather than subtraction or things that you can cut out, because dieting is often involves cutting out specific foods or food groups. So really starting small and making small sustainable changes and thinking about the foods that are accessible to you or pleasurable, nourishing, and keeping all those things in mind when putting foods together. So for example, it might be adding a piece of fruit to your breakfast or having some nuts with your snack, trying a new recipe or new cooking technique, drinking one more cup of water, or finding a new way to de-stress.
Okay. Now, there's the images online, but there's also the way that we talk about our diets and eating. And as you mentioned, often healthy eating can be code for talking about diets. So what do you say to people who they don't recognize it in themselves about the way that they speak about healthy eating?
First of all, I would say to treat yourself with a lot of self-compassion, because diet culture is everywhere. And part of having a positive relationship with food is that we are trying not to place moral value on our food choices. Diet culture perpetuates this idea that you're a good person if you eat foods that you're told are healthy, and you're a bad person if you eat foods that we're told that are unhealthy. And moralizing foods in this way leads to a lot of guilt and shame and isn't actually very helpful in terms of helping us nourish our bodies and develop a positive relationship with food. Oftentimes, we might find ourselves in situations where other people are using body shaming or food shaming language. And if that comes up, it's helpful to kind of plan for ways that you might respond. So trying phrases like, I'm not participating in diet culture anymore, and I feel so much happier. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some maybe the risk factors to develop disordered eating? If you think, or if you want to speak about eating healthy as code for a diet, or really trying to limit your caloric intake, what are some of the risk factors?
Dieting, first of all, can lead to a lot of feelings of anxiety, guilt, and shame. And that can really impact our mental well-being and lead to depression and other mental health problems. In addition to that, many of the things people do for the sake of weight loss can actually harm their physical health as well. Chronic dieting is associated with developing nutritional deficiencies. For children and youth specifically, it can negatively impact their growth and development. And also, it is a risk factor for developing more severe disordered eating and potentially even an eating disorder. So, if you are struggling with your relationship with food or like to work on your eating competence, I suggest connecting with a registered dietitian that can support you with your individual needs. So you can access a dietitian through HealthLink BC by calling 8, or you can go to the Northern Health website and under Dietitian and Nutrition Services, you'll find a list of providers that may be available in your local community.
A BC Supreme Court justice ruled this week in Smithers that RCMP violated Land Defenders' charter rights during their arrest at a CGL work camp in 2021. After more than 3 years and several court appearances, Wet'suwet'en land defender Molly Wickham, also known as Slato, and two other land defenders, Gitxsan member Shaylin Sampson and Haudenosaunee land defender Corey Jocko, got a small but important ruling this week. In 2021, all three land defenders were arrested after blocking access to work sites for the Coastal GasLink pipeline. During their trial, they submitted an abuse of process application, which sought to have their charges stayed due to the inappropriate conditions of their detention following arrest, as well as racist and discriminatory language used by the arresting officers. This week, BC Supreme Court Justice Michael Tamman ruled that the RCMP did indeed breach the land defenders' charter rights, a precedent-setting ruling, according to their lawyers. Following the ruling, the land defenders and their lawyers held a press conference at the office of the Wet'suwet'en in Smithers. I had a chance to speak with Molly Wickham following the day's events in court. But first, here's defense lawyer Francis Mahone on why this ruling is so unique.
Denise Sakase Skaze, my name is Francis Mahon, and myself and my colleague Quinn Candler have proudly represented many Wet'suwet'en, Gitxsan, and Haudenosaunee people over the last 3 years since the egregious arrests that happened on Gitxsan territory in November of 2021. It has been the honor of my life to fight alongside Slato, Corey Jocko, and Shaylin Sampson throughout these very difficult proceedings. I want to start by saying that while today was not a complete victory, it is still a victory. The court found that the conduct of the police officers abused the court's process. This is an extraordinarily rare finding, and it demonstrates how serious the police officers' misconduct was. In particular, it was a rebuke to the CURG members who thought it was appropriate to say the most egregious, racist things about beautiful Indigenous women when they thought nobody could hear them. We know what police officers say when they think no one can hear them, but now it is indisputable. I'll go over briefly what was decided today. It was a very complicated decision, a very complicated application that we made, and one of the most complex areas of law, so I'll try to be brief. We had made several arguments that the charter rights of our clients had been breached during the police enforcement of the injunction in November 2021. In particular, we made arguments that their right to be free from arbitrary detention was breached, their rights to be free from discrimination were breached, and their rights to be free from unreasonable bail decisions were breached, and that the CURG's enforcement represented an excessive use of force. We were successful on some of those arguments. The first that we were successful on was a finding that the police required search warrants and arrest warrants before they breached the tiny house and the house of Skaze. This is an important and precedent-setting decision by the court because what it means is that even if people are occupying land that they are not legally entitled to under colonial law, they nevertheless have a reasonable expectation of privacy and the police must follow the procedures set out in the criminal code to ensure the arrests were lawful, which they were not done here. The second and more important argument today that we made was that the heinous racist comments comparing our clients to monsters were racist beyond belief. And I'll quote from Justice Tammann's statement towards the end of his decision. He said, "I view the conduct as extremely serious, involving racism directly towards Indigenous women who have been systematically disadvantaged throughout all sectors of the criminal justice system for generations. I do not agree with the Crown that apologies from two senior officers, even with my judicial rebuke, is a remedy that adequately expresses judicial condemnation." This is an extraordinary statement for a judge to make, and one I have not seen in my career as a lawyer put so succinctly and so powerful. He drew from the words of Shaylin Sampson, who described the impact of these comments on her, who said that although it was horrible, it was something that she was not surprised by because of the history of how the RCMP have treated Indigenous people in Canada. The success on those arguments led Justice Tammann to find that there had been an abuse of the court's process by the police officers. Again, I want to emphasize how critically important that finding was, and a clear success from my perspective. And although we had argued that there should be a stay of proceedings issued, meaning that our clients could not be convicted, we were unsuccessful on that point, which of course is a disappointment. But we had asked for a second remedy, and that is that their sentences should be reduced. And the judge found that that was an appropriate remedy. And again, I want to stress the importance of the judge's decision in that regard. The Crown had argued that simply apologizing to our clients would have been enough, and it is not enough. Rather, what we have is a powerful statement by the courts, an imposition of a remedy that will help, in part, vindicate our clients' rights. Thank you very much, and I certainly welcome any questions or comments about what has been a very difficult process for our clients. And with that, I'll turn it over to Slato.
Following the update from lawyers as well as chiefs from the Wet'suwet'en, I had a chance to speak to Molly Wickham, also known as Slato, as to how these proceedings have impacted her life and what comes next.
I'm Slato Molly Wickham. I hold the name in Cassia House, Gidimden Clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. I'm the spokesperson for Gidimden Checkpoint, and we're here on Cassia territory, Gnuthkat. And we had the decision come down today in the court. Justice Tammann, in our abusive process application, agreed that there was an abusive process on certain accounts. We had made an application with multiple allegations of abusive process, and in the end, he decided that, ruled that there were two abusive process that he agreed with. And one of those was the breach of the tiny house and the House of Skyze, in which they entered without a warrant, and that was a violation of an abusive process that he found. He also talked about the anti-Indigenous racism and the comments that were made about myself and Shaylin Sampson, and that was something that he spoke very strongly about, and our lawyers have said that this is, you know, the statements that he made about that act specifically, and the other comments that were made about somebody else that was arrested on November 18th, and the racism and that it could be an attitude amongst the RCMP, because they were made by multiple officers, by multiple officers at different times, and so it wasn't just a one-off, which we know to be true, and so it was nice that that was recognized by the judge, and that he agreed with those, that that was an abuse of our charter rights, a Section 7 right to be free from discrimination, and so that felt really good to to be recognized. It was the one time that I got a little emotional in the whole process. I didn't expect that there would be a stay of proceedings. The stay of proceedings would mean that all of the charges were just gone, that we wouldn't be convicted or sentenced. And so that's apparently doesn't happen very often. But it was nice and good. I think that it made a statement that that racism is alive and well within the RCMP, and that it needs to be accounted for. And so my hope is that there will be some sort of accountability within CIRG. I don't think that they're going to hold themselves accountable, of course, but I do think that it might serve as some sort of containment for the way that they act, in the racist ways that they act and treat Indigenous women specifically, but Indigenous people.
Clearly, one of the other things that was hard to hear was the judge reading out some of that audio. When one thing that, as you mentioned, you know, this is rare that this is kind of brought up in court proceedings and stayed as well. But one of the things you pointed out was that the erosion of the integrity of the justice system. And he agreed with that, that those types of statements, the recordings that came out after, obviously those cops were speaking unknowingly that they were being recorded, or those recording devices were still rolling. And it, you know, he pointed that it showed a true, you know, true feeling amongst the police in that instance. Obviously, this is something that you and other Wet'suwet'en and other First Nations, Indigenous people have dealt with for a long time. How does this feel to you, or what does this say to you about the integrity of the justice system, which this is going on years now that you're having to deal with these types of charges?
Yeah, I mean, I think that first off, the fact that we're even in this process to me is really offensive. As an Indigenous person who's following Wet'suwet'en law and following our own law and governance, I don't think this whole process has been very challenging. I do think, and I personally, I don't believe that justice will ever be served fully for the offenses that we've experienced, for the violence and the repression that we've seen over the last decade and since contact. But I do think that it is important to call into question the integrity of the system, to call into question the RCMP, because they act with impunity, and they have done so forever, and they will continue to do so unless their own system checks them and people are checking their accountability. And so we know, and I argued this in court and talked about this when I was on the stand, about our history with the RCMP and how when the state publicly treats Indigenous people, especially Indigenous women, in this way, that gives permission to the rest of society to also treat us that way. And the same example has been given in court in Chief Sahil's sentencing, that because he was a public figure, that his actions can be scrutinized and should be scrutinized, because people are looking up to him. And so if people are looking to the state as the authority and they're acting in racist ways and dehumanizing me and other Indigenous women, then that gives permission to the rest of society to do the same. And people think that's why we have murdered and missing Indigenous women, because if the police aren't doing anything about it, then people think that they can go out and harm us and there won't be any consequences. And so if the police are the ones saying these things, then of course people are going to think it's okay. And so that's a really important, and it makes it really clear that the system is racist, and that the people who are supposed to be upholding the rule of law are hurting Indigenous people, and Indigenous women in particular.
Slato, there's one more hurdle, one more instance of court proceedings that you have coming up, sentencing. Tell me about what comes next.
So on April 3rd, there's a case management and another court proceeding to set dates for sentencing. And so myself, Shaylin, and Corey will all go to sentencing. We've asked for a reduction in our sentence, given we weren't granted a stay of proceedings. And so the judge agreed that that would be an appropriate remedy. So he, throughout his ruling, even in cases where he said that there wasn't enough evidence to authorize an abusive process or justify an abusive process, that he would be taking those things into account in sentencing. And so now we're waiting for the next process of how long that might all take, and then we'll get some dates for sentencing as well. Okay. And I just think that, obviously, I don't think that we should even have to go to sentencing. I don't think we should be in this process at all. But I think that it's important to consider, you know, when we're talking about the rule of law, and that was brought up a lot, and the integrity of the rule of law, I just want to remind people that the rule of law upheld the theft of our children into residential schools where they died. The rule of law upheld, you know, making it illegal to practice our governance. And so many people went to jail to continue, just so that we could continue to exist. And so us facing jail time is just a continuation of, you know, of those things. If we can't practice our governance and protect our land for, so we have clean drinking water and food and a future, I feel like that's just in line with the way things have always been.
Okay, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.